Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Thank you for coming back to watch another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight we are traveling to the deepest jungles of darkest Africa in search of primitive man in his native habitat. Oh, there's one now! Okay, enough of that. Let's cut to the trailer for Brutes and Savages.
And welcome back. That was the trailer for Brutes and Savages. A Mondo movie that totally and completely cashes in on Mondo Kane.
Basically, a Mondo movie is tribal rituals, scarification, brutality, the seedy underbelly of life from the ground up.
More importantly, I think a Mondo movie is white manifest destiny looking down on tribesmen. Exactly. And showing off the tribesmen and saying, look at these weirdos. Aren't they strange?
This is the natural outcropping of nature documentary shows like National Geographic or Mutual of Omaha.
But it's sleazy and tawdry.
Yeah, it's like they have a pretense of being anthropological, but they're really not. They're kind of like comparing a high-class restaurant to a greasy spoon. An actual anthropologist is the high-class restaurant. this is the greasy spoon of the same field. You know, there are a few worthwhile Mondo movies, but it's generally kind of sleazy and tacky and with a strong sense of white superiority.
So we should run down at least a bullet point list of what this movie does. So you have this fellow, Arthur Davis, the Arthur Davis Expedition, which I am suspecting is a complete bullshit pseudonym. So you have Arthur Davis, and he's leading this expedition through Africa, that's at the start of the movie, and then eventually down to South America. And he goes to this tribal village, and he talks to this, not necessarily elder, but like the elder's second in command. And you have this one moment, he's got this big medallion that's around his neck. It's this fucking thing. It's this fucking strainer. You take off the handle, and it's this round medallion thing.
And he's also got this lovely pink jungle jumpsuit.
Oh, yeah, very fashionable in the jungle.
Oh, my God.
So he goes, and they get the elder, and he comes up, and they say, they exchange some words, but we don't really hear it because we're getting voiceover at this point. And he basically goes and says, hey, I want to watch your tribal rituals. And they set up the cameras and start filming life around the village.
So basically, this whole thing is contrived. At the beginning of this documentary, under the titles, it says, this stuff's a blah, 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 whether real or reproduced is, you know, based on real events and stuff. And so basically, this is a recreation. This isn't an actual documentary. This is a contrived, this is a cinematic contrivance.
Basically, it covers their ass because everything in this movie is complete bullshit.
So what they're doing is just watching the people go about their daily routine. There's a guy that comes from the ocean, and he's going back to the village, and he decides he's going to seize the daughter of the chief, but she's already taken.
They have this weird stratification where you can have other women in the tribe, but thou shalt not touch the chief's daughter because that he will fuck you up.
So this guy is basically forced to go undergo combat against three of the champions.
Yeah, the three strongest men in the village. Yep. And so they have this bit where they're fighting with like sticks, and then they're fighting with like their fists and stuff.
And occasionally rocks.
And occasionally rocks. And they have this lovely, lovely bed of disco music.
Yeah, and it's the cheesy kind of Italian disco
music.
Like I
said, the music just never really meshes well with what's going on in the footage.
However, it may not necessarily mesh with the footage, but it's by Ritz Ortolani. We've had him come up a couple of times in the list, and he's always been quality. I mean, he did Cannibal Holocaust, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So what he does is really good. It just doesn't match the all, because they're fighting with in disco music.
So anytime there's a sex scene, suddenly it goes from just this really utilitarian, serviceable music to fucking porno. It goes to the Barnett's.
I forgot about that.
I mean, this is straight up John Holmes and fucking Nina Hartley or whatever, you know, music going at it. This isn't just like I'm imagining it. No, this is actual music you would hear in a fucking porno.
One thing that I did like about this sequence was the tribal makeup.
Yeah.
I don't know if... I sincerely doubt it was authentic, but it looked cool.
I mean, one of the guys looked like one of the... Like Paul Stanley from Kiss.
Yeah, he did.
And then there was one guy that had the feather boa... Yeah. Kind of Mohican or Mohawk all the way down here. It's like, I'm just going to glue this on my head. I mean, that was punk as fuck.
And there was the other guy, and in fact, I think it was the guy who grabbed the chief's daughter. He had this interesting-looking swoop on one half of his face, and then the other half was kind of like, it was sort of like a flattened yin-yang symbol, and another guy had kind of this checkerboard thing going on, and that was pretty cool.
I mean, my assumption based on some of the costume design for this thing, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that these people are scavengers or they trade in town, because they're basically this village is between like Botswana and Uganda or someplace. And I was thinking, well, that thing on his chest, maybe he went to town and traded for some native firewater shit.
You know what really happened is that Arthur Davis said, hey, you know, hey, production assistant, I need you to go get some tribal-looking shit. Go get me some tribal-looking shit. He went to Goodwill, found the thing, said, snapped it off, said, here you go, here's your medallion. That's what happened.
Probably are not actual African.
They're not African.
They're just black people that they rounded up.
They're about as African as Isaac Hayes.
So then we move on to what is arguably the best sequence of the entire movie. And you will never have thought that a alligator attack would be as hilarious as this.
This is fucking Hammer horror level cheese here. I mean, this is Vampire Circus with alligators.
Okay, so
crocodiles.
So let me set this up. For their coming of age ritual, the young youths of the village have to cross this crocodile-infested river. And they got to cross the river, get past the crocodiles, and they come out the other side of the river as a man.
So the first dude, he gets in the river, wades across, and he's fine. Second dude gets in the river, wades across, and we start seeing some stock footage of alligators on the shore. They say, oh, hey, lunch, and they start kind of swimming in. Poor third dude, he starts going across the river, and he gets attacked by a hand puppet.
Yeah.
This is the worst alligator I have ever seen.
The crocodile puppet doesn't even match the color of the actual animals they've been shooting.
More importantly, so the river is a kind of brown, muddy river that we've all seen rivers. We know what they look like. So the dude's wading across. It looks brown. In the close-ups of the alligator jumping on his arm, it's blue. It's chlorinated. It's a fucking swimming pool.
Furthermore, this animal, I mean, it looks ridiculously cartoonish. It's like somebody took their idea of what a crocodile is and basically made this fucking thing. Maybe they were watching Vampire Circus at the time where they took their idea of like a giant Black Panther and turned it into a killing machine, and the real thing looks nothing like it.
And, importantly, they take away the one tool that a special effects dude will use to cover up shitty effects, the quick editing. The beginning of the attack is reasonably paced and does a lot of cutting and back and forth. The end shot where he's got, like, the alligator's got the dude's head in its mouth is this long, lingering 15-second shot of a puppet.
They show a floating, obviously fake forearm left over with skin the color of zombies from like a George Romero movie.
That ain't no black man skin.
No, that's fucking gray, undead revenant shit that obviously has lost the color and decomposed in like 20 seconds.
So before they get to the manhood ritual of crossing the river, the tribesmen, they supercharge themselves up by stabbing a crab, and they eat the crab, and they're like, because the crab has a shell, obviously eating the crab is going to protect them from the alligator. Did you not just stab a crab, you motherfucker? And the shell did fuck all for the stabbing?
These native tribesmen crossing the river, they said it's like 57, the last 57 or so didn't make it back.
That's a huge tribe.
There's a lot. There weren't that many people in this village.
I think, to be fair about the numbers, I think that was an extended, over the past 6 or 7 years, 50 people didn't make it. So I don't think it's as compressed as you make it out to be, but it's still a pretty shitty success
ratio.
The
odds are really more odd than even.
That tribe would have been depopulated pretty quick. And so we say goodbye to Africa, and we move on to the second half of the movie, South America, where they start looking at the drug trade. They find a small village up in the Himalayan mountains that's crazy impoverished. They're so what?
Andes mountains. Himalayans are
It doesn't
Asia.
Fucking matter. They don't care. Why should I?
Okay.
So they're up in the mountains of Peru, Bolivia, whatever. And here they have this village where it's just absolute crushing poverty. Except it looks kind of nice. Well, for a third world country.
Yeah.
And they work their way through the Colombian drug trade where they go, here are the farmers picking the coca leaves. Here are the people exploiting the farmers by drying them out and paying them pennies for these coca leaves. And here's the drug cartel exploiting the dryers who are exploiting the, and so on and so on and so on.
Basically, they show the entire chain from one end to the other. They show the people eating coca leaves, which they explain staves off hunger, among other things, which a lot of people don't know about coca leaves, so you're actually learning something. It's like the people here at the beginning of the thing, they're not criminals, they're just people that pick the raw stuff. It's refining it that turns it into a criminal enterprise.
I knew that coca leaves were legal in Peru and Colombia and other parts of South America, where people eat them as a moderate level stimulant. It's basically the equivalent of having a cup of coffee. But I did not know that you could buy coca leaves in the market in a big bale for like the equivalent of 50 cents.
Oh yeah, I mean, I either saw a documentary or read about this decades ago about how the villagers are exploited by the people in town. Not necessarily the drug cartels, but when they would go down to town, you could get a bag of coca leaves like that for 10 cents back in the 70s. Imagine what they'd go for now. And then they have the big giant bales of it that probably go for hundreds of the relative dollars to the cartels, who then step on it a few times and eventually gets, you know, cooked and separated, the powder and all that shit. Yeah. And they go into great detail about how these people, these women, the village, they're pickers, and they go back to their village, which is having some kind of difficulty because they live in a kind of like a favela type of deal.
And they've got this weird superstition. Well, Arthur Davis claims they have this weird superstition where if you photograph somebody, the camera steals their soul. So normally you would think natives would be like, oh, no, don't photograph me because I don't want my soul stealing. What they do, or what Arthur Davis claims they do, is that they bring out the kids and put them front and center in front of the cameras so that the cameras steal their souls and that the kids will die. Which is clearly patently bullshit.
The claim is that these people consider their children worthless. And by stealing the souls of the children, their deaths will cause a dearth of people.
Mouths to feed.
And it'll bring up the prosperity because there'll be less people. Excess, you know, lives.
It's bullshit. It's all bullshit.
So speaking of the prosperity, then we move on to our next segment where it's the turtle wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where we start getting our first full measure of animal cruelty. We've had bits sprinkled in and out through the movie.
The goat.
The opening credits had some animal cruelty in it. There's been bits and pieces. But this is where you get your full-on look at it.
Poor turtle. My God. Oh, that upset me quite a bit.
And then they go through the wedding ritual of the... Oh, I love this bit. Where they have... They Arthur Davis asked permission to, hey, we want to shoot your wedding. We want to shoot your wedding night.
Yeah.
And the dude said, no. We can't show you the sacred ceremony. But then they still have footage of like close-ups and medium shots and like long shots. And okay, a 16mm camera is not a small thing.
Yeah, and they make noise too.
Well, also he said in the narration that they went ahead and decided to go and film it anyway, even without permission. And I was like, the hell?
But how are you going to sneak a bell and howl that's this big into this hut that and then get in their face?
Well, basically, it's always obviously a cinematic contrivance. So they basically take their equipment and they probably set up some shit someplace else. And then they film these people having their little sexual tryst, their little honeymoon, you know, where the woman's in this sling, you know, like a hammock, and her husband comes and gets in with her, and they start going at it on a fucking hammock
with a toucan phallus. What the fuck was up with that?
In order for them to seal the deal on their marriage, they have to basically cut the throat of this turtle and siphon a little bit of the blood for prosperity. Not a whole tanker full, just enough to get them reasonably bloody and wet.
And then we get into the llama killings, where they bring out this llama celebration, and they cut a throat, and I mean this llama screaming, and it's just, oh, fuck.
The very Aztec, like, ripping out the heart and showing it, still beating to everyone watching, it's like, yeah.
And that's the problem with this movie, is that it is so fucking long. Every single scene is drug out and out and out. After they get done with the llama slaughter, they go to there's this ritual where one tribe and another tribe come up to this plateau and they start throwing rocks at each other because they have this Hatfield and McCoy rivalry that's going back centuries. And okay, you can give us a little bit of a taste of them fighting and then cut away and still have the impact. But this scene just goes on and on.
And then, to make matters worse, the camera crew inadvertently distracts one of the warriors, who then gets hit really badly with a fucking rock and has to be taken into town to have surgery performed, which takes us to the surgical procedure where they drill holes in... They cut his scalp, pull his scalp open, drill holes into his skull. Then they take bone, basically a wire or cable to a cable saw, and then get the bit of skull off, and then start doing the brain surgery to save his life. And apparently, they saved his life so well, he gets to go out next year and do it all over again.
The brain surgery comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's just like, okay, we need to have some shocking gore in this movie. Fine, let's just get some stock footage of a brain surgery, and we'll say it's part of the movie. Like, no.
Thankfully, it's relatively mild. I mean, you've seen this kind of shit on, you know, the medical shows and stuff. It wasn't, like, nasty, gory.
And it's fortunate that the brain surgeon also happens to be the curator of the Phallus Museum.
There's this museum of sexual devices or sexual artifacts in Bolivia. Arthur Davis goes in there to kind of look at things and be all lurid and whatnot. There are no cameras allowed, so they sneak him in. They sneak them in by setting up lighting and the cameras everywhere. And Arthur Davis walks around really relaxed and everything, unlike somebody who's actually being sneaky. So basically, Arthur Davis spends about 4 or 5 minutes showing us sexual artifacts from the old days. A lot of it is vanilla. There's some anal domination, rape, phalluses, and sucking and whatnot.
And then we get to the climax. Thanks, I'll be here all night. Try the veal. We get to the climax of the movie where they have a llama orgy.
Yeah.
A fucking llama orgy.
They basically take a plate and they have a corn cob stuck in the middle, and then they basically get it all nice and ready for the female llama. They have to use this thing to get her in the receptive mood. Then they help the male llama get it in, like manually.
And put him on top of her.
Yeah.
And then the final shot of the movie is the men are so engorged and horny that it's like, I got no choice. He drops trowel and starts fucking a llama on screen. Roll credits. Fuck you, movie.
Yeah, you know, it's cute watching llamas getting it on because at least they're the same breed. But they're saying, well, you know, humans and llamas, we're all animals. We need to be, you know, more cooperative and towards each other and realize that we're all basically the same. So let's have a nice, peaceful coexistence between humans and llamas. And I'm going to go
peaceful. Peaceful coexistence does not necessarily mean bestiality.
And then the coda, where all of a sudden Arthur Davis goes to the Ruggio Deodato page, where he says, who are the real brutes and who are the real savages? As this dude's grinding away on a llama. I'm like, fuck you. Deodato got away with that in Cannibal Holocaust because he earned that. You did not.
Well, also, there's a fuck ton of things that are just exploitative in that, like the narration, like referencing the turtle wedding. There's a bit where when the couple are going into their new house, and his narration says that they basically have a year to conceive a male child, otherwise the bride will be taken back to her father and he will poison her to cleanse the family of its shame of not having a grandson. And I'm like, the fuck?
Ashley, say something nice.
Okay, there was a wide shot of the impoverished village, which was really epic. I thought, wow, that's something.
All right, Brad, say something nice.
In the bit with the Andean natives surrounding the lake and the whole llama ritual, they have some fucking awesome clothing.
Yeah, very colorful.
Very colorful. Amazing. A lot of it looks like it's made out of wool or maybe alpaca wool. But, I mean, they had some really cool duds on.
So you got any final thoughts you want to drop on us?
Fuck you, Arthur Davis. Straight up your ass sideways with a bluntwood dick, and I hope it breaks off up in there.
Well, that pretty much sums up our thoughts, I think. So was Brutes and Savages, would you seize it? Or would you let the shopkeeper keep it?
No, I would seize it. I would seize it and have it burned. It's brutal. It's gratuitous. It's unnecessary. It's degrading and it's exploitative.
The one that got me the worst was the goat.
Yeah, where they cut off the goat's head and they basically turned it into a hand puppet and waved it around.
And I mean, thinking just, you know, God damn it. Why? Why on earth do people have to do this bullshit?
The thing that got me was the turtle.
I am going to be so bold as I wouldn't stop at just banning it. I would put this movie on the 39.
Yeah.
Because that one segment in the middle of the movie where it's 15 minutes of nonstop just animals killing other animals for this extended period of time in the middle of the movie. I'm like, no, I do not need to see this. Fuck this movie.
The only savages really that you need to worry about are the ones behind the fucking camera.
So, Ashley, did you like Brutes and Savages?
Give me the button.
There you go. Fuck! Oh!
Oh my God, so this is one of the most reprehensible sick things I've ever seen. Brutal savages fighting each other, brutal tribes people killing innocent animals for religious reasons. You've got the phallic imagery in this museum, which may or may not have actually been a museum, you know, just for the sake of entertainment purposes. And then the usual just buffoonery of some guy stumbling around watching other people do their thing.
So tell me what you really think.
Three words, up the ass.
Brad, that's a hard act to follow.
It was dull. It drug on constantly.
If this movie was maybe 70, 75 minutes, it might be tolerable. But it's almost 2 fucking hours of relentless, nonstop, just keeps going and going and going.
I can't say that I found it dull only because I dreaded every single second of this fuck. It's like, what the hell's going to happen next? Am I going to get more animal killings? Which, of course, I did. So for me, it wasn't dull. It was just dreads. It was just dread.
Yeah, fuck this movie. Fuck this movie. We're done. And fuck this. Fuck this. Fuck. Fuckity fuck. We're done.
Well, thank you for watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Come in next weekend so you can see...
Stay evil. These people, by our standards, are poor. They have never seen a book, a television, a washing machine. They have no cars, no dishwashers.
Not a single luxury like Robinson Crusoe. It's primitive as can be.